Hey everyone, it's the Keeping It Real podcast with Chris Norris returning. Took a few weeks off to reset, reprioritize, wanted to get a couple guests lined up moving forward. So today I'm excited to be sitting down once again with Dr. David Hutzel. Dr. Hutzel is a doctor of internal medicine locally here at Greenfield Internal Medicine. They are connected to UPMC Hammett here in Erie, Pennsylvania. This is the second time I've sat down with Dr. Hutzel. We talked about 2 months ago in mid-March when the coronavirus was really starting to get serious, and locally, Erie County was bracing for it to basically arrive. So Dr. Hutzel back then made some predictions and some recommendations and just offered his insight into the virus and how it would evolve on a state and a national and a global level. And he was pretty spot on with everything that he suggested. And today I just wanted to circle back with him and see how it has changed, how his perception has changed, how our lives have changed, and what the future looks like for the coronavirus, not only just here in Erie County, but beyond. So Dr. Hutzel offers some great insight, some great suggestions and predictions about the virus. And yes, I'm sure everybody is just about as tired of hearing about the coronavirus as I am. But you know, Dr. Hutzel's somebody who I've definitely grown to trust. I really appreciate his perspective on all of this. He's a local voice here in Erie, so I hope that you will give this episode a full listen and hear what Dr. Hutzel has to say about where we are now with the coronavirus pandemic. Enjoy. Okay, well, I am excited to be back again with Dr. David Hutzel. Dr. Hutzel is a primary care physician at Greenfield Internal Medicine. Dr. Hutzel, thank you again for having me here in your offices, and a lot's changed since the last time we talked.
Yeah, you're welcome, Chris. Yeah, the last 6 weeks have been interesting and exciting for our city, our country, our world, and there's certainly a lot to talk about, so looking forward to chatting with you today.
Yeah, so I was here at Dr. Hutzel's office in mid-March, right after things got pretty serious, and he was gracious enough to give us his perspective and kind of his outlook on where the virus was heading, how it was going to impact locally our region here in Erie, Pennsylvania, and now we are pretty much in the middle of May almost already, so almost 2 months later, and you'd have to be living under a rock to think that the virus hasn't evolved, changed circumstantially for everybody across the world. What has been some of the biggest things you've seen change since the last time we talked?
Yeah, so they're really, you know, here on the local level, and I'm a physician that works for UPMC Hammett, so I'll just speak about our facility. Our facility has really gone to tremendous lengths to really get ready for a major influx of patients, which fortunately we have not seen. Our administrators have been in the hospital 7 days a week. We have daily meetings at 6:30 every morning, getting updates from our chief medical officer. We've opened a testing center. The entire fifth floor of Hammett was sealed off and basically set up to handle COVID patients. And there were even contingency plans beyond if we overwhelmed the resources at UPMC Hammett. But really our administrators, our chief medical officer, our infection control and infectious disease doctors really took it seriously right from the get-go and have been doing so all along. As I said, we even had a meeting this morning at 6:30, and we have meetings typically every morning at 6:30 giving updates. What's the latest with testing? What's the latest with outbreaks? Where are we at? And it's been pretty impressive.
From a personal perspective, I guess even so professionally, how is your perception of the disease change? You know, maybe at first we were kind of all curious about it, skeptical of it. How has that changed for you?
You know, to be honest with you, I think the virus has done sort of what I thought it was going to do. So as of this morning, it looks like just shy of 80,000 Americans have died thus far. When we were talking in March, they were having predictions as potentially as high as 1 million or 2 million. So although, you know, we grieve the loss of those 80,000 Americans that are dead, you know, fortunately, I think we as the United States, I think we really did a good job trying to keep this under control and preventing it from becoming that. I think my only thing that I'm a little bit surprised about is I was hopeful that the virus was going to be somewhat short-lived, like the SARS virus previously, that was basically active for about 6 months and sort of went off the radar screen. There's a lot of literature that's saying that this COVID-19 virus is mutating and there's different forms, and we may see this virus wax and wane on and off over the next 1, potentially 2 years. And that was the one thing that I was not quite expecting. I thought the COVID-19 virus was going to be active, but I didn't think it was going to wax and wane for, you know, potentially up to 2 years. So that's the one sort of surprise that I didn't really see coming.
So locally in Erie, Pennsylvania, we've had, I want to say minimal damage, very few directly related deaths, minimal cases, confirmed cases. How do you feel locally, especially in your neck of the woods here at Greenfield Internal Medicine? How have our mitigation efforts helped keep that damage done here to a minimum?
Yeah, I think what we have done in March and April, I think actually worked well. I mean, we're for a city of 100,000 people, we have well under 150 cases. There's only been 2 deaths. I think what we have done in Erie County, I think, has really worked well. And I have to give credit where credit's due. Now we're in that somewhat controversial area where we're starting to open up. And there's a lot of chatter, we're opening too soon, we're not opening enough. And that's the thing that, you know, we could talk about in more length. But I think what we did in April worked well. I think that our public health department, I think our local politicians, I think our hospitals, I think we really took it seriously early on. And again, for a city of 100,000 people to have less than 150 cases, I think is pretty darn good.
I would agree. We've really been very lucky locally that it hasn't gained a ton of traction. So you are obviously directly connected with UPMC, and they've really been at the forefront of this disease. Everything from their mitigation efforts, office to office, hospital to hospital, they're working on a vaccine, they're pivoting the way they see patients and the video, diagnosis and things like that. What has been, I guess, some of the things that you've been most, I guess, proud and excited and impressed with by how UPMC has approached COVID-19?
Yeah, they really have taken it very seriously. They're working diligently on a vaccine. They're working diligently with other facilities doing testing on medication to find out what meds may work, what meds don't work. I've been very impressed with the communication from UPMC Central. We are invited to weekly meetings that are UPMC wide, and you know, UPMC is a major, it's a $15+ billion company with over 80 hospitals. So you're talking about a major institution that is having weekly meetings where all 85,000 employees are invited to attend. And I think they're really trying hard to get these vaccines, to get the testing up and running. Just this morning, we were talking about how they're now doing 3D printing to accelerate the testing kits that are available. And they're really trying hard to disseminate this information amongst the UPMC physicians. You know, the problem is that these vaccines are very, very complex. It's a difficult process. And I think we Americans have a zero defect type mentality. We want our cars to be perfect. We want our food to be perfect. We want our clothes to fit just right. And so we Americans don't have a lot of tolerance for medications or vaccines that aren't very, very good. And although things are getting rushed through the FDA, they still have to meet these standards, and these tests just simply can't be rushed. And I know a lot of people are frustrated that we don't have medications and vaccines out sooner, but it's a very, very complex process. And the testing, you know, when you do a trial of a vaccine to see how people tolerate and respond, it's something that takes weeks and months, and you really need thousands of patients to really get good data. So it may seem like the medical facilities aren't doing a whole lot, but I can guarantee you that there's hundreds of physicians behind the scenes that are working diligently to test meds, test new immunizations. And again, you are correct. UPMC is right on the forefront out of Pittsburgh. And again, a lot of that information and technology is being disseminated here locally in Erie. So it's been a kind of that type of mentality that we saw in World War II, where factories were turning over, you know, widgets one day and they're turning out bombers the next. And I kind of get that feeling from UPMC that they're really have turned on a dime quickly to, you know, focus their efforts on this. So they're taking it seriously.
Since you're talking about vaccines, my wife and I were talking this morning about what is that actually going to look like one day? Is that going to be, you know, when you have children and they get their, if you choose to get their immunization, is that going to be one of the vaccines they receive at a young age for adults? Are we going to be lined up bumper to bumper somewhere, just going through a kind of an assembly line, getting these vaccines? I know it's still early, like you said, but what do you see that if and when hopefully there is a vaccine developed, what do you think that process looks like?
Yeah, I think it will be, you know, once we really do identify the most effective vaccine, I think you're going to see it get ramped up quickly, mass production, and I think there'll be a widespread public push for people to get this. The challenge is as I mentioned earlier, is that we're seeing that this virus is mutating, and now we're seeing different forms. So I think it's going to be an effective vaccine, but it's not going to hit all of the different forms or the different variants of the COVID-19 virus. And that's where I think a lot of the challenges are going to be. This is a very complex virus, but I heard a talk over the weekend. Think of this as the cold virus. You know, we all get colds every year or every other year. And I've heard patients say, well, why don't we just simply come up with a vaccine for colds? Well, similar to colds, you know, the cold virus is basically the what's called the rhinovirus, and there's hundreds of variants. And so the concern that we have is that this COVID-19 virus could mutate over and over and over and over again, and so that we may get a vaccine for the COVID-19 virus, but will it hit all the forms? Will it hit the most deadly forms? And that's really where the challenge is. This is very much of a moving target. And I think that's really where the immunologists are really struggling in terms of how do we make a vaccine that's safe? How do we make it effective? And we have this sort of wily virus that's changing quickly. And, you know, can we come out with a vaccine that's going to hit most of the types of virus? And so that's the big challenge.
What do you think has been the biggest thing we've learned, I guess you've learned as a physician, but maybe even more broadly that we've learned about pandemics? I mean, this is my first pandemic and disease control. Like, this is going to be around for a little while, and it could possibly be something that our country and our world deals with for the rest of our living lives. What has been some of the biggest thing you think from a medical professional we have learned about not just COVID-19 in particular, but maybe viruses and potential pandemics, like that whole process?
Yeah, great question. Well, unfortunately, pandemics have been something that we've seen over and over again throughout the history. So everybody has read about, you know, the Black Death, the plague in the Middle Ages, and then smallpox that came about, measles came about. And then obviously everybody refers to the Spanish flu of 1918. So unfortunately, pandemics are part of human nature, and we will see this. And as I had said when we spoke about 6 weeks ago, we will see other pandemics in the future. If not the COVID-19, there will be other viruses. As there are more humans, as there's more pollution, as there's more crowding, we are creating the sort of perfect environment for bacteria, virus, fungi to grow, to mutate, to change and overcome our immune systems. And so, unfortunately, in our lifetime, I'm 50, you're
34.
We probably will see another pandemic, if not the COVID-19 virus, you know, a different thing. So, you know, the old saying, history repeats itself. So, and interestingly, so a lot of the things that occurred with the 1918 Spanish flu are occurring now. So, for example, cities that did not pay attention to this, such as Philadelphia in 19, they had a big parade, and 2-3 days after the parade, about 5,000 people died. St. Louis followed or observed what was occurring in Philadelphia. They shut their parade down and they didn't have those deaths. So it's basically the same lessons that we saw in 1917, 1918 are occurring again now. Social distancing, washing your hands, wearing a mask. Those are all the things that we did in the 1917, 1918 Spanish flu that we're doing now. And the cities that are doing that are seeing much lower outbreaks. So again, I think we've done a pretty good job here in Erie. But again, history repeats itself, and those things that we're doing and those things that we have done with the previous pandemics have been what's worked. So I guess, you know, sort of history repeats itself. So again, I hate to be negative, but we will see other pandemics, if not with this virus, other viruses and bacteria as time goes by. And again, those public health things that we did in 1917, 1918 are still effective today. So I know that everybody's tired of wearing masks, washing their hands, and not going out, but those are the things that were effective then, and those are the things that are effective now.
Sure, those preventative measures have probably, well, most certainly saved a lot of lives. Yeah. So I guess the one question, maybe a little off script here, that I was thinking of as you talked about that is, what do you think everyone talks about the new normal? Because last time we were here, you gave some great advice about deep cleaning your home and making sure you're washing your hands and making sure you continue to do best practices with your health and your diet, things like that, that are very helpful. But as the virus evolves and our lives evolve to kind of adjust to this new normal, what does that look like, do you think? I'm not asking you to say how long we have to wear masks, but what do you think the new normal looks like as we move forward and prepare and deal with the current pandemic and potentially prepare for a future? Because like everyone keeps saying, nothing is going to really truly return to quote unquote normal. When you hear people say that, what do you envision in our world?
Yeah, fortunately or unfortunately, I think a lot of the things that we're doing now, we are going to see, I think, for the foreseeable future, a year or two. Buying a new car without test driving it, that may be a new normal. Restaurants that have very limited seating, you know, new normal. Mm-hmm. So those are the challenges. And, you know, we've all been in stores recently where there's plexiglass, and I was at Lowe's yesterday and there were hand sanitizers all around. That may be the new normal. Interestingly, a lot of our social mores and a lot of our social interactions, such as shaking hands, having big dinner parties, hugging our friends, those may never fully come back. I'm a country boy from Ohio. I'm a handshake guy. Will the day come where, I greet somebody or make a verbal contract by shaking hands? I hope so. What will it look like? And then when we do return to church and we give the sign of peace, will we shake hands or will we just simply acknowledge and nod our head to people? So I think, the way we interact socially likely will have changed for the long term. And, then it goes to those bigger questions, will there be, football stadiums with 120,000 fans? Will there be the Indy 500 with 500,000 fans? Will the new sporting things occur without, tens of thousands, hundreds of thousands of fans? And even after this COVID-19 virus passes, what will sports, what will those big massive events look like 5, 10, 15 years down the road? And this is definitely a major change for us from a sociological standpoint. And I don't know what the right answer is. Interestingly, I have a daughter who's going to school in Denmark and is very much enjoying that and is planning on traveling to Sweden this week to see some friends. And interestingly, there's been actually very little change in Denmark and the Scandinavian countries and their outbreaks don't seem to be quite problematic. And it will be interesting looking at other countries. You know, why is there minimal or no cases in New Zealand? Why are there very good control of cases in Korea? Why is it that Sweden basically has had minimal or no closures, and yet their outbreak numbers are relatively low? And so it's going to be interesting to see the communication country to country, leadership to leadership, as to what worked in other countries and why are we experiencing different here in the United States. And so, you know, I was thinking about this weekend, kind of getting ready for this interview. Are we seeing a relatively higher number in the United States because we're maybe not as of a healthy population as they see in the Scandinavian countries? Is their diet better? Is their lifestyle better? I don't know. Those are just rhetorical questions. But, you know, I know that there's been the kind of political touch point that this virus seems to be hitting the lower socioeconomic status, minorities. And is that indicative of our public health of the lower socioeconomic people in our country and minorities in our country? Is their diet not as good? Is there more stress in their daily life? Is that affecting their immune system? And those are all things that will be interesting to look at. You know, as you know, the Scandinavian countries are consistently rated as being, quote unquote, the happiest countries in the world, right? Denmark, Sweden, Norway, they're consistently ranked year after year as being, you know, the happier places. So does that correlate to less stress, healthier immune systems, and therefore they can tolerate the virus better? Or is this a genetic thing? Or is this a, you know, so that's an interesting concept. Whereas there's much more social uniformity in those socialized countries, and there's less social uniformity here, is that why we're seeing the difference? And I just think that, you know, there's going to be a lot of interesting questions as we look back on this pandemic a year from now, 5 years from now, 10 years from now. Why was there a difference in the United States compared to other countries? And so a lot of food for thought. And I think, you know, people that work in public health and epidemiology are going to have a field day trying to figure out, you know, what was different here versus New Zealand, what was different here versus Korea. And then obviously countries that have a lot of poor, such as Brazil, and they're seeing massive outbreaks in São Paulo and their bigger cities and their slums. So is this a socioeconomic disease? You know, does socioeconomics tie into nutrition, immunity, stress, all of those things? So it's interesting watching how this affects different countries across the world right now.
Absolutely. Yeah, it's a great point. Let me ask you, you know, doctor's coat aside, how are you dealing with it from a personal level? And maybe someone that can really connect with how you are dealing it outside of the medical profession.
Yeah, and it's a great question. You know, and again, as I mentioned to you about 6 weeks ago, it's a little bit of a gut check. You know, I am 50 years old. I do have a couple medical problems. And so I don't think I'm necessarily immune from having a serious complication or even death from this virus. We have started to see patients in the office more and more, which I enjoy. But with each patient, you always, it's a little bit of a gut check. You know, am I going to be ready to deal with this physically, mentally? In the month of April, we were doing primarily telephone visits and e-visits, and I was actually doing several weeks working from home. And so I was in this protected little cocoon and little bubble, but now that bubble's been sort of broken. We're opening up more, we're seeing more patients, and we need to see patients because a lot of the patients that we haven't seen, their medical problems are much more severe. We're seeing much more heart failure. We've seen much more heart attacks, wound infections, because patients haven't been getting seen. Well, now we're seeing them, and it's been a little bit surprising for my partners and I how sick some of the people are, not from COVID, just from their other medical problems. I am a little bit concerned. I wouldn't say that I'm scared. I wouldn't say that I'm anxious. I wouldn't say that I'm losing sleep over this. but I definitely don't take my health for granted. I don't take the time with my wife and my family for granted. I don't take the brief instances that I spend with my friends hiking and getting together with them with social distancing for granted. I don't. And because I do think this is something we'll face for a period of time. And I hope if and when I'm exposed to this virus that I can handle it. So a little bit of anxiety, food for thought, but I'm trying to take care of myself with good nutrition. I'm trying to exercise. I'm trying to get plenty of sleep. I don't know if there's a lot of value there. I did start myself to make sure I'm my vitamin D levels. I have started taking some vitamin D in addition to just good nutrition. And as I said, I'm just definitely not taking my day-to-day existence and day-to-day health for granted. I'm appreciative for what I have. So
absolutely. It's a great perspective. And yeah, everyone's such an uncertain time. There is no right or wrong answer to that question, really, and how everyone's handling it differently. Yeah. We've seen both the good, the bad, and the ugly with how people are handling it. But where last time you gave some great advice on how people can kind of stay up to date, you know, hearing it from, for lack of better words, the horse's mouth, where is the information that you recommend people tapping into? Because we live in a noisy world. Where can people really, if they were to go turn the, well, maybe they shouldn't turn the TV on, but if they were to go get online or read something, where do you want people getting their information from?
Yeah, and I think that stays about the same as what we said about 6 weeks ago. I encourage to try to stay out of the political fray. This is a disease. This isn't a Republican disease. This isn't a Democratic disease. I think that the media outlets that are trying to spin it and pointing fingers, I would actively discourage people from that. I do think that the CDC website is excellent, and I look at it myself several times per week. I think that is really an excellent website. I really feel that, you know, again, as I mentioned a couple weeks ago, what is biblical in terms of medical literature is the New England Journal of Medicine. That can be looked at online. They just published a major article on Plaquenil on May 7th, so just 4 days ago, which, by the way, Plaquenil was not shown to be effective in reducing death or disability from this virus, as an aside. I would encourage people to look at the mainstream journals. So again, New England Journal of Medicine, the JAMA, the Journal of the American Medical Association, the large medical facilities like the Cleveland Clinic, the Mayo Clinic, really have excellent websites. They have excellent journals that people can log into and look at. Again, I as you mentioned, I would discourage, media, right wing, left wing. I don't think this should necessarily be spun. This is more of a scientific issue, not necessarily a political issue. But again, I think, you know, for the Joe Q layperson, I really do think that the CDC has an excellent website. I encourage people to look at it. I think they give good advice regarding rest, nutrition, exercise. There's good data on there. And I think those would be the things I would look at.
Wonderful. Well, we appreciate that direction, because there is so many different directions we can take when trying to seek out information. I would also recommend even just the UPMC website has, I've been kind of my go-to source as well, just to see the research they're doing and the Dr. Hutzel and his team are connected to, and it's great the work they're doing as well. So Dave, thank you for your time today.
Of course,
I appreciate your insight. I'm taking notes in my head so that I can get as much value from this as everyone else, but I appreciate your perspective and the work you're doing here.
You're welcome. Yeah, we could touch base in the future. I do think this will evolve. I think it will change. I am hopeful that as we go into some sunnier, warm weather and people are getting outside and more active, I am hopeful that we continue to see virus counts stabilize or drop off. I'm hopeful for that. However, I do think we may see a spike next fall and next winter as we're indoors and people are not getting as much sunshine. So it'll be interesting. And it's important that we keep lines of communication open, touch base during the summer and the fall. I think this is an evolving topic. And I think that 3 or 6 months from now, we're going to know a heck of a lot more than we do right now. I know people are searching for answers and, you know, when can we be fully open? When will we have an immunization? What medicines work? I really do think that 3 to 6 months from now, a lot more questions are going to be answered. People are working hard right now. And so I look forward to kind of just touching base. And I do think that we'll know a heck of a lot more come August, September, or October than we do now.
And hopefully we'll have some warmer weather by then too, because I think I can count on one hand since the last time we talked, the warm weather we've had. But spring is here and hopefully that'll help. Again, definitely want to touch base with you again in the future, because hopefully by then we'll have some good news to report.
Yeah,
so
absolutely.
Appreciate your time today.
Good. Thank you.
Guys, thanks so much for listening to another episode of Keeping It Real with Chris Norris. Really appreciated Dr. Hotzel's words, and I hope that you guys got as much value out of this episode as I did. And really, this pandemic has changed the course of our lives, both personally and professionally. And one of the things a lot of people have had to do, they really have had to pivot and change the way they do business. And a lot of people have started to focus a lot of their attention on social media and how they use social media to continue to show up and serve their customers. Listen, social media is always changing, and it's hard to keep up with the latest trends and best practices to grow your online presence. Well, at Revox Social, we make social media simple by helping you expand your reach online and successfully connect you with your customers. If we can help you do that during this time, to really help you adjust the way you do business now that so many people are spending so much more time on social media these days, let us know if we can help. That concludes another episode of the Keeping It Real podcast with Chris Norris. I appreciate everybody, your support, and please continue to stay safe until we talk again next week.